When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the special Baroness's Birthday edition of The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. I am Kevin Day. He is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. He is also hoping the Baroness will think this is a lovely surprise rather than the equivalent of a bunch of flowers bought at a service station at 5 to midnight.
Yes, my wonderful wife, she turns 60 tomorrow.
Don't say that, Kieran. Today. Just say it's her birthday, don't say.
which means she gets a rail card, which I'm very jealous of course, because I'm a dweeb. But yeah, we've had lots of nice messages because I've sort of reached out to a few people I know. She's been very patient with me this year, as I've not had a single day not working due to football finance nonsense. So yeah, quite a few people who we've met over the course of football through politics and the game itself have been in contact. I've sort of said any chance of a message. I was very, very surprised to get one from Wayne Rooney saying, "What's she doing Friday night?"
Well, the thing with the Baroness is she's going to have trouble with that free rail card because she's going to be constantly stopped by a railway employee saying, "You're 20 years too young for this," which is the sort of thing you should be saying, Kieran, rather than revealing her true age. You've got some proper presence. You didn't just give her a free amortisation class or a silky spreadsheet, did you?
Yeah, I've got one or two things lined up for her.
Okay, good. It's Newsday, Kieran, and the first story is actually something of a birthday present to you because you have been mithering on about this since we first met and it involves Manchester United.
Yes, and first of all, I'd like to say well done, Manchester United. What they have done is they have committed to paying all of their staff the real living wage in Manchester. Now, you know, we're talking 58 pence an hour, which might seem not a lot to some people, but it does make the difference to others. I've been going on about it for some time.
Can I just stop you there? Because for people who don't know the actual figures, we're not talking about 58 pence an hour. We're talking about an extra 58 pence above the real living wage here, aren't we? So,
it's an extra 58 pence above the government figure.
Yes.
So United, every time they pay a dividend of £9 million to the Glazers, I get a bit worked up to say, well, why can't you look after the staff who are, you know, customer facing, who are dealing with people who are having a good day or a bad day at Old Trafford and do it with patience and charm, in my experience. We got a message last night to say that they have done that, and whoever's made that decision, well done, you've done the right thing.
Yeah, and also we're talking about a lot of staff here on the match. We're talking about over 1,000 people, casual and permanent, on match day in and around Old Trafford who are going to benefit from this payment, aren't we?
Yeah. But I mean, we crunch the numbers, and you know, I think the total cost over the whole of the season, I've worked out as being around about £150,000. So you know, Manchester United have a wage bill which is in the hundreds of millions. So 150,000. I think they've done the right thing, and I think it also puts pressure on other clubs to follow suit as well.
Yeah, because it's shameful that there is, and this should be said on behalf of Manchester United, that there are still other clubs out there who are refusing to pay the real living wage. So well done, Man United, and like we say, come on, the rest of the people. We've spoken a lot about Man United on the pod recently, and we are hoping to speak to someone from the club about yesterday's announcement and various other things, and they seem quite amenable. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll be having a proper Man United chat with somebody from Old Trafford, a Spanish giant now, Kieran. And this definitely beggars belief, because Barcelona have announced that they are 1.35 billion euros in debt, which is 1.15 billion pound, depending whether you exchange your money at the post office or the airport, basically. But, I mean, these are just... And they I'm not entirely sure what a negative net worth is, but they announced a negative net worth of 451 million euros. This is Barcelona we're talking about here.
Yes, we knew that Barcelona had financial challenges, and that was connected to Lionel Messi leaving the club, the fact that other members or senior players are being encouraged stroke shamed into taking pay cuts to enable them to actually put some of their summer signings into the squad. They can't do it at present because their wage bill is now going to be around about £140 million this year, which will put them, to give it some context in terms of the Premier League, it will put them in between Palace and Leicester. And that's no disrespect to either of those two clubs, but you know, we're talking Barcelona. And they used to have a wage bill which was close to 500 to 600 million. So they have to take a massive cut in their wages, simply because they've run the club appallingly. So the new president is, of course, blaming his predecessor for getting them into this pickle. But that debt figure that you quoted of 1.3 billion euros is far higher than anybody anticipated. And I think the negative net worth, I think that's broadly talking about the losses they probably made last season, which again, you know, we're talking a football club at the end of the day. You know, to be losing 8 million euros a week, if that is the case, is quite scandalous.
As you say, the current president, Juan Laporta, is blaming his predecessor for this. He's saying that under his predecessor, the wage bill was 103% of income, and if they'd kept Lionel Messi, it would have been 110% of income, which he said was just inconceivable. Is it entirely due to stuff that's happened on the previous watch?
I think it's a byproduct of the presidential system. How do you get people to vote for you to be president? You tell them things that they want to hear. So we have had a succession of presidents at Barcelona who say, vote for me and I will sign some players for 100 million euro. So they've signed Coutinho, Griezmann, Dembele, each for more than 100 million euro. All of those have failed. They signed Pjanic, who for a ridiculous fee, although that to me stunk of creative accounting. And for those of you getting slightly twitchy about that, creative accounting is where you stay within the rules, but they're not, you're not really applying the principles. So it was they've had some very strange decisions, and they've also recruited players on wages which are unsustainable. Now part of that could be linked to Messi, because Messi's salary was so high it effectively set a benchmark. And whilst nobody expected to have anything the same as Lionel Messi, they still might, you know, if Messi's on 50 million a year, well, then surely I'm worth at least half of what he's paid. And and that became the going rate. And on the back of that, the wages increased and increased. You can't extract yourself out of long-term contract commitments unless both parties agree. We did actually see last year, you know, and Messi himself was very vocal on this, that the players were willing to compromise on their pay demands because they didn't want other people at the club to lose their jobs. So I think to blame it on Messi, as some people have tried to do, is harsh. It is simply rank bad management. And COVID as well. Yeah, we can't deny that COVID's a non-factor here.
Gerard Piquet was one of those players who apparently, and I quote, willingly took a pay cut to comply with salary cap rules so that other players could be signed in this summer. But Laporta also revealed that the first thing he had to do when he took over was get an 80 million euro loan, I beg your pardon, to pay salaries. Now, I'm guessing if you had to get an 80 million euro loan to pay salaries in 1 month, aren't you going to have to keep doing that in months to follow?
Yeah, unless they were, unless they'd maxed out their overdraft or gone over their overdraft. Yeah, it's payday loans are always a short-term fix, and they're never a good fix if you're in a situation where you have to apply for them. So it is alarming. It looks as if they have also now got into an arrangement with Goldman Sachs for some longer-term loans to try to see them over the course of the next 12 to 18 months. It's going to be a rocky road, but at the same time, I think, well, hold on, you know, Leicester City managed to win the Premier League on that level of wage. So, you know, there's no reason why Barcelona cannot be competitive, and they will still have a wage bill which is high by La Liga standards. So, you know, let's not get out the violins for them. That they got themselves into this mess by spending money which they knew wasn't going to materialise.
I'm almost quite pleased to think of President Juan Laporta, who I imagine lives in several lovely houses, hearing his phone go off at 7 o'clock in the morning, thinking, "Oh no, that's the bank, isn't it?" I don't know what the Catalan is for. You've got till 2 o'clock to pay in sufficient amount to fix your overdraft. But it's nice to know it's happening all over the world, much closer to home. But it's still a story that's getting quite scary for Birmingham City fans. The Birmingham Stadium fiasco is rumbling on, and terrifyingly, Kieran, that rumble may actually be bits falling off the stands. As each day goes by, there's a new detail about this story that gets even more worrying, isn't it?
Yes. Birmingham City's, and I'm going to call it St. Andrews rather than the yes. Trillion Trophy Stadium, because that's what it's not. St. Andrews is, as an away fan, and yeah, let's be honest, as an away fan that was in the Championship only a few years ago, Birmingham was always a good day out.
Yeah.
And it's a proper old school stadium, but it wasn't in the best of nick, and it does appear that it's been deteriorating on a continual basis to such an extent that repairs were required. Now, I think the club will try to use COVID to help themselves here, to say, well, we couldn't get the work done because of COVID. But at the same time, we have just had a good few months on the back of COVID where, you know, people working in construction can do things. But when it came to the start of the season, St. Andrews was in such a state of disrepair that they effectively couldn't get the equivalent of a safety certificate for some of the areas, and therefore fans were unable to attend. As a result of this, there was a problem. And that problem was that they'd already sold quite a few season tickets, and the capacity for the ground was below the number of season tickets sold.
Is Finlay okay? Is that him singing happy birthday in Dog?
It's some flowers arriving for the Baroness.
Oh, has he got hay fever? Why does he not like flowers?
I think he's more concerned with the guy delivering them.
Ah, okay.
Who doesn't appear to be carrying any wonky chomps as well. So Finlay feels he's being disadvantaged here.
Yeah, quite right. So, yeah. Yeah, so we're saying, so some Birmingham fans, two stands were closed off, which meant there was a ballot, and some Birmingham fans with season tickets couldn't get in on the last home game.
That's right. So, yeah. And you can understand the frustration of the Birmingham fans. They've waited 18 months. They have tried to support their club financially if they've had the resources to do so. And now, as a result of this ballot, you've got some Birmingham fans who will be able to go to the match. But, you know, as one fan said to me, I've been going for 38 years. I was looking forward to going with my old man, you know, because we know football has got that still that unique dad and lad experience for many of us who grew up through the game. And now, if we do both get tickets, they could be for different parts of the ground. It's just sheer lunacy. So I don't think it reflects particularly well on the club here. And it shows either a lack of planning or they've not put enough money into getting the ground into a better state of repair early enough. They've known when the season's been starting for long enough.
Yeah, also, in the past 3 to 6 months, we've had a lot of questions from Birmingham fans about who's responsible for repairs because they're renting the stadium. And the council have revealed that City have what they call a full repair lease. So the club are actually responsible for repairs. And again, you'd imagine they would have known about this for some time. You kind of implies that they haven't got the financial resources to deal with it. But also the CEO, which I thought was a really crass thing to say, telling fans that not to worry, they know all about it, but they're going to leave it because they may be building a new stadium, which you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to see through that sort of nonsense, really. They seem to be adrift here, don't they, the club?
Yes, yeah. We both know in relation to either getting a new ground or extending our existing ground that saying it's one thing, doing it, it turns out to be a good few years later. So I think that's fairly depressing. Birmingham have been losing money on a regular basis in recent years. The sale of Jude Bellingham, what's happened to the money there? Has that just gone into a giant pot to cover losses which have been made in other years? Or what exactly is going on? There have been issues with the club on an ongoing basis for far too long. And the owners, who are effectively controlling the club from overseas, don't appear to have any understanding or empathy with what the Birmingham City fan base are going through.
You amaze me, Kieran. Scotland now, a potential conflict of interest here, Kieran, is Gordon Strachan has rejoined Celtic in a consultancy role while still working as a technical director at Dundee. How can he do that?
Well, on the face of it, I think it looks really uncomfortable. I mean, The only issue is going to be when those two clubs face each other. And you can only assume that Gordon Strachan has to give a commitment, presumably to Dundee, that he will not talk to Celtic with regard to Dundee's formation, tactical, technical issues. But if he's also working for Celtic as a consultant, surely he's got a commitment to them as well. So that does seem to be a little bit strange. At the same time, I know firms of accountants that are working for more than one club, and therefore they have access to information which could be commercially sensitive. So one only can assume that Gordon Strachan has signed a contract which has effectively given him some form of non-disclosure commitments, because otherwise it looks awkward, to put it mildly.
In terms of league rules, and I'm not entirely sure what they are, but if this consultancy role with Celtic was unpaid, would that make any difference?
Not necessarily. Unless we knew the terms and conditions of each contract, one could be, if he's helping Celtic on the commercial side and he's helping Dundee on the training side, then you can say, they're not coming into contact with each other, and therefore, in theory, he wouldn't be accessing information which is of benefit from one club to another. And also, I think we have to be realistic. We know that football's a small industry. We know that people in football do talk to each other. We know that you've got scouts and you've got managers attending matches of forthcoming opponents. So how much would seriously be given away from one club to the other? I'm not convinced it's going to be a major game changer. I just think it looks a bit awkward.
Yeah, producer Guy said to me, well, you worked with him, why don't you text him and find out? Because you're always saying how clever and funny he is, which is true, but I obviously forgot to mention how cross he can get sometimes. So the last thing I'm going to do is text Gordon Strachan and say, is Kevin here? Been a while. What's going on? even the text would sound high-pitched. I've never met anybody. Watching football with Gordon Strachan is just astonishing. Anybody who thinks they know football needs to sit next to Gordon Strachan watching the games. It's just amazing, his level of knowledge. And he's also one of the funniest people I've ever met. Still not texting him. UEFA, Kieran, and FIFA have banned away fans at next month's international matches in Europe because of a COVID spike. So, oh, well, as long as the grounds were full for the Euros, eh, lads? But is this going to cost money? Oh, well, obviously it's going to cost money. How much?
It is going to cost money, but the majority of the money is probably coming through broadcast rights. And I think FIFA and UEFA are quite twitchy about if they upset too many governments on a domestic level, that football could become sort of the whipping guys. But yeah, we've seen football return here in the UK over the course of the past 2 weeks, and there's been no spikes to date that we're aware of as a consequence of that. We do have full capacity stands. It just seems to be a disconnect between what's happening here in the UK and some countries and the decisions which are being made by UEFA and FIFA.
Mm. That knocking sound was me touching wood, not the cat trying to get in. She's nowhere near as clever as Findlay. Speaking of COVID, Accrington Stanley have been given a £7,000 COVID fine, and it's fair to say that owner Andy Holt is not best pleased. I'm quoting here. They are a joke shop, the EFL. They can shove it, the EFL. Cost £500,000 to keep this shit on the road while they were working from home. Not entirely sure what the last one means, but he's obviously not happy about this. And also, interestingly, the way it's been reported, it just says, in general, £7,000 COVID fine. There's no real detail as to what Accrington are being fined for here.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Yeah, I think it was due to some matches being postponed. And I can understand it from Andy Holt's perspective. Yeah, we've had him on the show. We're huge fans of Andy. He is a person, I've spoken to Andy on quite a few occasions over the years. He is a man of principle. He's also a man of Accrington, in the sense that he feels that, he runs his own business. He's very committed to the welfare of his staff. And presumably he's taken the same approach when it comes to Accrington Stanley. He doesn't want matches taking place when there is an increased risk of COVID spreading. And therefore he's made a decision from a health and safety perspective. And I would fully understand that, because let's face it, if it was you or I and we were forced to play a match in the EFL because they want the fixture list completed in a certain time period, although they were quite happy to abandon football and get clubs promoted or relegated on a three quarters season only 18 months ago. But if there's pressure for matches to take place from the EFL, should that take precedence over his responsibilities as an employer in respect of his staff? What happens if one of his staff gets COVID and dies? How would you or I feel under those circumstances? The idea of the integrity of the competition taking precedence over that? Well, that's absolute nonsense. People are important. I think we are become very blasé with regards to COVID, but yet people are still dying. People, of course, still dying from other diseases as well. There's no denying that. But it's a global pandemic, and clubs are losing money. And to increase those losses through fining a club which has postponed matches to prevent COVID spreading seems harsh. To me, the EFL here are coming across as rule-based robots. It's the classic computer says yes, computer says no approach to dealing with the matter. The rules were not designed with a global pandemic in mind. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's a case for saying, under these circumstances, we're going to say, we'd rather you not do it again, or or just a gentle bit of finger wagging, but to financially punish a club who's already, as he said, it's cost him £500,000 as a result of the pandemic, just seems tinier. Yeah, it's just out of proportion to what's happened.
And just down the road, the potential hostile takeover of Rochdale AFC is actually getting hostile with the new group who want to buy the club, claiming that the club will go bust if they're not allowed to do that.
Yes. There's a lot of mudslinging taking place at present. It looks as if the prospective owners have around about 40 to 42% of Rochdale shares. And Rochdale's a really interesting football club. I mean, you know, I've lived in Manchester for the majority of my life, and I'm fully aware of the history of Rochdale as the birthplace of the cooperative, and it has that. It still has that mentality. It still has that pride in itself. So the shares in Rochdale were actually shared between many, many thousands of people, which meant that in order to acquire control, you had to go to individual shareholders to buy those shares. Now, some of them sold out because they didn't feel the need for the shares anymore. They were offered a decent price and so on. The view of the Rochdale Supporters Trust is that they were quite happily being Rochdale. Yeah, they liked the fact that they've never been under the control of one person. And some of the comments which have been coming from the prospective owners that they quite like the idea of having a place to call their own to go and watch football and have a pint on a Saturday afternoon, that just doesn't ring true. You know, why would somebody who lives 150 miles away drive up to a football club with a view to just using that as an excuse to watch football? Why don't you just go, if you want to go and see the action, you know, either go to a match or hire a box in an individual club, and you can have just as much fun, and it's not costing you £1,000 a week covering the losses. Mm. So Rochdale, are they losing money? Yes, they are. Are they losing enough money to make them go bust? I think that's tenuous at best. The vast majority of the clubs in the lower leagues are losing money. They are coming up with a variety of ways of addressing that. So we have a position where I think it's now fair to say there are one or two people who are effective kingmakers, who own significant shares in Rochdale. Yeah, we're talking, you know, 3-5% each. And if a couple of those switch, and I know that there's one in particular who could tip the balance, then Rochdale could have new people in control of the club. But you know, the response of the Rochdale fans, and I saw some of the banners up the Dale not for sale, would indicate that even if there is new ownership, it doesn't necessarily mean that the whole battle is over and things could turn ugly. You know, I can see the Rochdale fans either boycotting matches or protesting in a variety of ways. I know that they've been in contact with our friends at Swindon, who had owners with whom there was a bad relationship.
Yeah, sorry, are you okay?
Yeah. Sure, yeah, I thought I'd stop talking there.
Yeah, normally I'm very good at gauging when you've stopped talking, but you just every now and again you're very excitable today. So, have you been out?
I have. I've been to London. I've been to the big city.
Oh, that's what
I got quite giddy.
That explains it. Then you're still all excited at the electric light and moving staircases on the underground.
That's right. I didn't have a train. I didn't have a senior citizen's train pass, though. Unlike Mother Arf.
Oh, my Lord, I really hope she doesn't listen to this pod. And it's a birthday special as well. This is shocking. Rochdale Supporters Trust, we would love to talk to you. I know you have been in touch with Guy. We would happily talk to you if you absolutely promise not to start naming names because old producer guy is worried that he might have to spend 0.01% of his finances on our silver tongued friends in case we accidentally slander someone. So, yeah, this is a situation that this has been simmering for a while, and it is very similar to the Swindon situation. And for the love of God, let's hope it can be sorted out without 3 years of the bad people taking over the club as happened at Swindon. Are you sure you're okay now? You want to take a deep breath?
I'm rocking and rolling, Kevin. Rocking and rolling.
If I didn't know you better, I think you'd had a drink.
Oh no, there's no chance of that happening.
That's what I know. You haven't been close to somebody who's had. No one's been breathing out on you, have they?
I'm not mature enough to drink, Kevin.
Yeah, probably for the best. There's another war of words in the Northwest, Kieran. This time between Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola, with the Liverpool boss quite clearly implying that Man City seem to be following different financial rules.
Yes. Now, it's difficult to work out here whether this is a criticism of Manchester City and Chelsea or a veiled criticism of Liverpool's own owners from Jurgen Klopp. So he was saying that City and Chelsea operate effectively by their own rules because of the nature of the ownership, which I still find a bit strange because Manchester United have spent more this summer than Manchester City.
Yeah.
And yet they seem to get a free pass from Jurgen Klopp to a degree, although I think he had a little bit of a dig of them as well. The transfer market is mainly in a period of stagnation. It normally needs the lubricant of a few mid-sized deals going through, and we're not seeing many of those. But clearly, Manchester City signing Jack Grealish for £100 million, followed only a few days later by Romelu Lukaku joining Chelsea for 97.5, which didn't get, only got a fraction of the attention, seems to have irritated him. And he's trying to make out that Liverpool are, somehow disadvantaged. But, if you want to be disadvantaged in the Premier League, then, take a look at Brentford, who've got a 17,000 capacity stadium, who have not spent a lot of money, who have a wage bill which, last season was around about a tenth of that of Liverpool's. And you don't see them moaning. And one of the things which concerns me in the Premier League is that we now have a quiet acceptance that the Premier League can only be won by three or four clubs maximum at the start of each season. Mm. And you and I, Kevin, we're both old enough to remember Derby County, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, Everton, Leeds United, Blackburn Rovers. All of these clubs, they won the Premier League or the top division. And they did so. And at the start of each season, there was always a big handful of clubs who say, if they keep free of injuries, they've got some good players coming through. And I don't quite work out when we all changed our attitudes to assume that a good season for our clubs is if we finish 12th. Mm. Or, why should we have no... why should we have no ambition? And the reason for that is simply down to money. I did some spreadsheet analysis following his comments, and it turns out that of the 29 Premier League club winners, on 23 occasions they had the highest or the second highest wage bill. So the likes of Chelsea and Manchester City, it's not new. It's been in the Premier League since day one. If you've got more money, you're going to win things. And, it just so happens that at this stage, those clubs have quite a bit of money.
Yeah, I heard you explaining those numbers to your new best friend this week, Colin Murray, on Five Live. Last week, it was Gavin Cryptocurrency who was your new best friend. And this week, it's Colin Murray this and Colin Murray that. And Colin Murray is so clever. Have you done Colin Murray show? Yeah. He likes you. He likes you, doesn't he, Colin Murray?
That's because I'm free.
As in cheap or available?
Or both.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, I'm on about to say that the Baroness won't remember Derby, Nottingham Forest, etc., winning the league because she's too young, Kieran, remember. Yes. Now, I like this story, Kieran. The world's oldest football club, Sheffield FC, will be appearing live on the BBC when their FA Cup preliminary game with Sherwood Colliery will be shown behind the red button in a couple of weeks' time. Presumably, this will be their biggest payday since the club was formed in 1857.
Yes, it will. They will be entitled to a fee as part of the Football Association's distribution network. So the way that it works is that the TV fee is split. We're only talking tens of thousands, but tens of thousands to a small club can make a difference. The winners will also get prize money, as will the losers at this particular stage. And for anybody who has not seen non-league football, has not been to a match, I'd really encourage them to just give it a try. It's different. You can sit there having a chat to a complete stranger. You can be having a drink whilst you're watching the match while standing. And there's always a fair chance at matches at this level that you'll get proper reminiscences of what we grew up with in terms of football, where somebody will take another player out and then you'll see one of them offering to have a word in the car park after. And it's that type of romance that I really miss. You know, football has become very sanitised.
Kieran, I'm surprised that you've been out of London too long. Talking to complete strangers, Kieran, what's the matter with you? The appropriate response for a Londoner when a complete stranger starts talking is, what's he want? But this is great news for Sheffield FC. It's great news as well for Sherwood Colliery. So I'd love to hear from both supporters of both those teams. Also, I love the fact that Sheffield FC Stadium is called the Home of Football Stadium, which is brilliant. So that's a two fingers to the rest of the world, isn't it? Take that, Juventus, Barcelona. But the other end of the scale, our final story, Kieran, because we're keeping the pod short because you've got a birthday to attend to.
And a wedding anniversary as well.
Oh, did you get married on your... Oh, never mind.
I got married the day before the Baroness's birthday because I said, wouldn't it be fantastic for you to get married and wake up the following day next to a toy boy?
I think your chat-up technique needs some work, Kieran. Do you know that? I genuinely really do. But at least you know, it's nice to have two crosses on the wall chart, isn't it? Knowing yes. that something's going on. The other end of the scale from Sheffield FC, I hope you've got her a good present. The BBC are reporting that PSG are seeking to sign Paul Pogba on a free transfer and a wage of £500,000 a week. Is that possible?
Yes, it is, because from PSG's perspective, and I think we mentioned this broadly in line with the acquisition of Messi last week. Mm. Paul Pogba, at his age, he could sign a five-year contract, and the club looks at the total cost to them over the life of the contract. Now, that total cost is wages plus, of course, our very good old friend, amortization. Mm. Now, if you're signing him on a free, then you don't have that amortization cost, which allows you to therefore spend more money on the wages. Manchester United did this themselves when Ibrahimovic came to Old Trafford. You know, they got him on a free, which allowed them to offer him a very good package. And I think what players are now doing, especially as they reach the last 2 years of their contract, is they're saying to themselves, or sometimes it's their agent whispering in their ear, this could be a spectacular payday. They're going to retire as multimillionaires anyway, but if they want to max out in terms of their earnings, then they will sit on their contract, wait for it to expire, and they will have an even bigger payday and more remuneration. Yeah, we saw Aaron Ramsey do the same with Arsenal when he went to Juve.
Now, we will be back on Monday with our questions pod, as usual. And as usual, if you have a query about any aspect of football finance, then email us on questions@priceoffootball.com. And if you'd like to make a small contribution to our always free to air pod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. I'm not going to ask Kieran to do his normal farewell this week because he hasn't got time. He's got flowers to buy, poems to write. But if you'll indulge me, I would like to dedicate this episode to a dear friend of mine who we lost yesterday, comedian Sean Locke, who was a Chelsea season ticket holder. Comedy and football have lost one of the best. But more importantly, on a much happier note, happy birthday to the Baroness. We love you. 45 tomorrow. Wonderful.
Thank you very much. And all the best to everybody connected with Sean Locke. I'm sure they're missing him terribly.
The Price of Football. Price of football.